All right. So nice to see all of you this morning. And if you came in halfway through the singing, we apologize. This morning we had our sound tech was called to work, unfortunately, in an emergency situation. So we had no sound tech today, okay? But we can bear with it once in a while. In fact, we're going to up the casualness of the service here. Because I was going to come down, but there's a table here, so we can't do that, all right? It's a little warm for me. These are the bad days for us, all right? Okay, so let's turn our Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes. We are in Ecclesiastes. We're walking through this book. And we are now in chapter 2. If you have a hard time hearing me, if you're in the back, I would invite you to come forward, okay? This is what it's going to be like this morning. There's a lot of chairs here, a lot of chairs in the front. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Let's remind ourselves of what's going on here. The writer of the book of Ecclesiastes is introduced to us in chapter 1, verse 1. The words of the teacher. The word teacher is the Hebrew word Kohelet. Kohelet. And Kohelet, as we know, is not just teacher, lecturer, professor type. It actually also has the idea of the gatherer, the assembler, the one who assembles a group of people. So again, the mental picture that we have is Grandpa. Grandpa sitting in the living room on Grandpa's chair, and he calls together his children and his grandchildren, and if he were so blessed, his great-grandchildren. Come sit with Grandpa around the fire as Grandpa tells you stories. As Grandpa tells you, imparts to you wisdom. Wisdom that I, Grandpa, have gained through life. Grandpa is old. Grandpa's got a long beard. Grandpa's got the wrinkles. Grandpa just exudes wisdom. Who doesn't want to listen to that? Who doesn't want to listen to Grandpa tell stories of his wisdom? A lot of people. A lot of people don't have time for that. A lot of people say, Grandpa, Grandpa, next time, okay? I gotta go do some stuff. I will come and listen to you next time. You see, you ask the question, who doesn't want to listen to Grandpa? And the answer is, a lot of us. A lot of us. A lot of us continue to take the attitude, we're going to figure out our own. We're going to figure it out on our own. A lot of us take the attitude, Grandpa, I know that you lived it, but I need to live it for myself. I got to experience it for myself. And as a result, more often than not, what we find out is that we walk the same path that Grandpa walked, and we arrive at the same place. And you know what happens? Then you become Grandpa. And you become Kohelet. And you come sit at the fire. And you call your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. You say, come and listen to me. And then you say to your great-grandchildren, if only I had listened to my grandpa, maybe I would have avoided certain things, certain pitfalls, certain difficulties, certain struggles. Why do we do this? Why do we play this game? Oh, it's because we're stubborn. It's because, look, let's admit it, okay? Let's be honest with ourselves, okay? We are not the most eager to learn individuals. We want to figure it out on our own. We want to learn on our own. We don't want to be beholden to somebody else and somebody else's advice. Feels like maybe we owe them or they're smarter than us. In this particular case, Kohelet's pretty smart. Kohelet's got a lot of good things to say if we would just listen. Turn your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Kohelet has struggled with purpose and meaning, significance, fulfillment in his life. Everybody, I mean, to one degree or another, is searching for some kind of meaning. Searching for some kind of significance. And when we don't experience it, there's a reaction. It could be anger. It could be disappointment. It could be depression. It could be dissatisfaction. We're all looking for something. Kohelet's no different. He lived life. He didn't experience any kind of fulfillment, so he started to search for it. He went on a war path. I'm going to go and find meaning. I'm going to find significance. And so we find out at the end of chapter 1, he went and he searched for wisdom. He said, I'm going to become smart and learned. I'm going to know the ways of the world. People are going to come and ask me for advice. So he went and he read and he studied. That's what we find this out at the end of chapter 1. He becomes an intelligent, knowledge-filled person. But then he tells us that left him empty. Because the more he learned about the world, the more he discovered the world is broken. It is messed up. And these things, these problems that we experience, that we see in the world, they can't get fixed. They can't get fixed. And I don't want to keep belaboring the same point, but the news just writes itself for us. I don't have to go and search for bad news, even locally, for us to be reminded that the world is broken. Some of you live in the San Ramon, Danville area. Perhaps you heard that there was another situation at a local San Ramon high school. A student was preparing to attack. And that student was shared this information with another student. And that other student let the authorities know. So it was actually thwarted. And they went to go and arrest the student. They found guns. They found all kinds of plans. They talked to the individual. He confessed. He had a list of people who he was going to target. I don't have to search far and wide for this kind of stuff. Every day I have the same routine when I get to work. Every day I turn on my computer, and the first thing I kind of do is I sort of check what's going on. So I have sort of three outlets. I have sort of a worldwide perspective. This is the national news, international news. And then I look at the Bay Area. I look at SF Chronicle, SF Gate. I look at that online just to see, is there anything pressing in the area? And then I spend my last sort of circle is the what's called Contra Costa Times. It's really just in this area. It's now called the East Bay Times. They have a website. I get my news. And every day I kind of look, what's happening? How hard is it for us to find evidence again that Kohelet is right? Kohelet knows what he's talking about. Kohelet says in chapter 1, verse 15, what's crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. What is crooked cannot be straightened. The world is crooked. And the kinks and the turns and the angles, You can't pull it straight. You can't. It's not possible. You know, back in the day, we had corded phones. Do you remember your corded phone? There was a handset. I was trying to teach this week. I'm sorry. I don't want to digress too far. But this week, it occurred to me and Cindy, you know, if something happened to either of us, Zachary doesn't know how to use the phone. I need to show him. So I said, Zachary, pick up the phone. Okay, the phone at home, we have a home phone. It's sitting on a base. It picks it up. And I said, press talk. Okay, press talk. And here's my cell number, okay? And 324, and he's calling my number. I said, put the phone to your head. Do you hear it ring? Uh-huh. And then my phone's ringing. Hello, hello, hello. I had a little fun for 5 seconds. And then I said to him, when we were done, what'd I say? Hang up the phone. Now, some of you who are like under 30 have no idea why that's meaningful to me. Why is it meaningful to me that I said to him, hang up the phone? Because we used to actually hang the phone. There was a phone that was attached to the wall, and it had a little lever. And then you took the handset, and you put it on the lever, and it pulled the lever down, and you hung up the phone. The phone was connected to the base with this really bungee-ish, spirally cord. Have you ever seen it before? Laura, you know what I'm talking about here? Can you just nod along? Make me feel better. And that thing sometimes would have kinks. Remember that? Can you straighten that thing out? Okay, that was a long path for a very short analogy. I lost half of you, okay? You can't straighten it out. We go to chapter 2. Let's move on. After Qoheleth searches for intelligence and wisdom, he says, that left me nothing. That got me nowhere. It's time to search for something else here. And he searches for something that we would consider maybe fun. He searches for pleasure. He searches for indulgence. And we're at chapter 2, verse 1. I said to myself, come now. I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself up with wine and embracing folly. My mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor. And this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. Chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. Qoheleth turns to pleasure and indulgence, and he says, you know what? I'm just going to live it up because I can't find meaning in wisdom. I can't find meaning in intelligence and being learned. Maybe I can find wisdom and fulfillment in enjoyment. Maybe that's where I'll find it. If last week's sermon about being intelligent and learned and having worldly wisdom, if that didn't resonate with you, you say, oh, I've never done that. That's not me. Maybe this is you. Maybe this one, this part, hey, you're going to find fulfillment in enjoyment. And maybe you're saying to yourself, hey, that sounds like a good plan. That's more like me. I identify with that. Couple of things here I want to point out in this passage. The first thing he says, he has this repeated expression that seems to govern the whole section. We call this an inclusio. Look at verse 3. He says, I tried cheering myself up with wine, embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens. Under the heavens. Okay, so he's like, I want to find out what's good for people to do under the sky in the whole world. Look at verse 11. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done, what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. You have this expression here, under the heavens, under the sun. Are those the same thing? Yes, they are the same thing. Under the heavens, under the sun. Kohelet says, I'm going to go and search far and wide, under the heavens, under the sun. And the key phrase to me, going back to verse 3, I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their life. That to me is the operative phrase that drives Kohelet. He says, very astutely, when we are under the heavens, under the sun, the days are short. Life is short. Life is short. And if life is short, then I'm going to go and search for meaning by enjoying myself. Oh, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I started talking about golf. Do you remember that? And I sort of lost my train of thought. Do you remember that? Somebody over here. I was quite embarrassed that day. Sorry about that. That was very unprofessional of me. I started talking about golf, and I just started talking about the grass is green. Don't let me forget another second. The grass is green, and hit a good shot. I remember what I was going to say that day. It actually relates to this, too. Life is short, okay? When you're out there on the golf course, and I'm playing with strangers, and I play on a Monday, okay? Monday's my day. Monday, I don't go to the office. I told you that before. I go and I play Monday, and I'm playing with strangers. I don't know these people. Generally speaking, who are the kinds of people who play on Mondays in the daytime? Retirees. Okay? Every so often you will see a younger person who's not a retiree. Every so often. And so there's kind of a wink, wink. Are you playing hooky, you know? It's my opportunity. No, I'm actually a pastor. And Monday's my off day. And then they'll say, I went to a client and I was done at noon, and so here I am playing. So we're sitting there, we're playing, we're getting to know each other, we're being friendly and stuff, and that's what happens on a golf course. And every so often, it'll just dawn on our group. Man, I would so much rather be here than at work. Especially after a bad shot. Oh man, bad shot. I'd still rather be here than at work. Life is too short not to play more golf. That's the joke, okay? You gotta go play. Life is too short. There's going to come a day when I won't be able to play. I know that. I used to say to myself, Andy, where's Andy? We kind of have a sort of a little running joke. We play basketball every Sunday night for 2 hours down the street. There's a group of us. We rent a gym. Those days are coming to an end. Those days, the days are very soon where we will go to the gym to watch our children play. Because over the years of playing, we ain't no spring chickens anymore. And tendons and ligaments and muscles are a little bit tighter now than they used to be. When I used to coach high school volleyball, I would say to the girls, to the players, your bodies are like rubber bands, okay? Just stretch and come back, no problem. You get older, the rubber band kind of hardens and it kind of gets crusty and you pull it and guess what? It snaps. So we've seen our fair share in our game. We've seen bad injuries, torn this, broken that. We've seen them all. Okay, we had a visitor come, and the first day he played, he got hurt. Actually, that happens twice. Okay, so the days are coming to an end, and we'll one day be old men. We'll look back. We'll watch Hannah and Zachary and Jacob and Joel and Lauren. They'll be playing, and Annabelle, you can play too. And we'll say, you know, those are good days when we used to play every week. Remember those days? And then we'd pay for it on Monday. Oh, yeah, the old man doing this kind of a thing. Life is short. That's what Kohelet says. Kohelet says it. When I had children, the Kohelets in my life, they would come and they would say to me, Eddie, enjoy your children now. Before you know it, they're going to be graduating high school. And I thought to myself, every time I hear that, I thought to myself, why does everyone feel so eager to tell me that? Is it because you are Kohelet and you didn't enjoy your children? Is it because you woke up one day and your child was out of the house? Why do you feel so compelled to tell me that? I'm trying to enjoy them. They're not enjoyable sometimes. Well, what do I do? I don't know what to do. They're not that fun sometimes. My friend Arnold is visiting from Los Angeles, and he's been staying with us, and last night Jacob was a hoot. And then this morning he was not. It was night and day, and everything was wrong this morning. Go and enjoy your children. Yeah, go see Jacob this morning. Go and enjoy your children, because you're going to blink and they're going to go to college, right? Everyone told me that. And it's the same thing. It's Kohelet all over again. Kohelet telling me life is short. Life is short. You know who says life is short? What kinds of people say life is short? Old people. Old people. Old people say life is short. In a couple of weeks, I've been invited to go speak to the senior fellowship. It's here once a month on Wednesdays. Maybe I should tell them, life is short. Kohelet tells me that. Do we start with that perspective? You know what? I tend to think that most of us who are not old, if you consider yourself not old, and there are quite a few people here who are not old, don't look at the 8th grader next to you and say, I'm a 10th grader, I'm so old. No. You're not old, okay? You're not thinking that life is short. You're thinking, I've got a long way. There's a long time before I get to that point where life is short. I'm 42 years old. My mother died when she was 45. My sister is 50. And when she turned 45, you know what we said to each other? When she turned 46, you have outlived Mom. You think my mother expected that life would be that short? I have been raised from a very young age to recognize the brevity of life. So if I'm out there playing golf, don't judge me. Because I've already told Cindy, kind of wink, wink, kind of serious, I don't expect to live a long time. I don't have longevity in my blood. That's okay. I have no problem with that. I really don't. And while I'm here, let's try to do something meaningful and fun and find fulfillment, but recognizing that life is short. Kohelet, you're right. You're right. It is short. The days are short. I get it. I understand why you're telling me to enjoy my children. So, Jacob, keep crying and throwing a fit. I love you. Keep doing it. Because one day I will miss this. You're not going to miss that part. Kohelet is right, folks. And I'm going to tell you right now, for those of you who consider yourself young, if you can recognize that life is short, that life is brief, that the days on earth are few, I'm telling you right now, you will already be more spiritual than the people at school. You will already be more thoughtful and significant in your thinking and in your value system if you can come to recognize that life is short. Kohelet starts with that. And he says, look, life is short under the heavens during the few days of our lives, and so I'm going to find pleasure. Let's look here. What does he do? Well, he starts kind of at verse 3. It sort of starts at verse 4, but we'll start at verse 3. He said, number one, I tried cheering myself up with wine. All right? So he imbibed. He drank. He says here that he cheered himself up with wine. He embraced folly, but his mind was still guiding him with wisdom. So, kind of gives us the image that he's not getting hammered. He's not getting plastered. He is drinking enough to feel loose. Okay? He's loose. He's just having a good time. All right. And then he says in verse 4, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself, and I planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks. I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves. I bought male and female slaves. I also owned more herds and flocks. I amassed silver and gold, the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and the harem. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. And all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. And this was the reward for all my toil. So he really goes to town here. This list is impressive. Great projects, built houses and planted vineyards, gardens and parks and kinds of fruit trees. Verse 5, I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. All kinds of fruit trees in them. There are certain times in the Bible that there are phrases that trigger our memory of things in the past. All kinds of fruit trees. Does that sound familiar to anybody? All kinds of fruit trees. What's that? That's creation. Exactly. When God made the land and he made all kinds of trees for Adam and Eve. In a sense, Kohelet says, look, I had the resources. I had no limitations. I'm going to try and create an Eden for myself. For myself. And so he goes and he does all these things and vineyards and homes and gardens and parks. He's got people to serve him. He's got herds and flocks. He's got wealth. He's got male and female singers. Male and female singers to wake him up in the morning. Your alarm clock. His alarm clock is a chorus, a choir of singers. Have you ever seen the movie Coming to America? A choir of singers. You seen that movie, right? Yes, it's just beautiful sound to wake him up in the morning. And then on top of that, he has a harem. A harem. He's collected. And I use that word very, very carefully. Because to Kohelet, women were an object. Women were a possession. He had a harem of women to pleasure him. He's got everything. What doesn't he have? He's got the ultimate bachelor pad living. Everything at his disposal. Nothing did he withhold for himself because, you know what, the days are short. And this is just what I want to do with my time. And he says, though, again, in verse 10, we know how this ends. I denied myself nothing. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor. All this was a reward for my toil. And yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. All this stuff that he amassed, it didn't bring him fulfillment. And he's not just saying that, oh, he's so hard to satisfy, maybe it'll bring you fulfillment. No, he's trying to say, I amassed all these things, and these things don't fulfill. They're not designed to. They're designed to disappoint. This right here, folks, this right here is a test whether or not you believe Kohelet. Kohelet says, surrounding myself with stuff didn't bring me any kind of fulfillment. It just brought me emptiness. Now, we could take a moment to reflect on that. Let's think here. Phone comes out. You really want that phone. Oh boy, you've been begging your parents for that phone. What is it?
Motorola flip phone, right?
You want that phone. And then you get it. Oh.
What a day.
You play with it for a while, it's awesome. You text your friends, hey, what's up? I'm on my new phone. How long before that phone's no longer fun? How long? Let's be honest. Is it a matter of days? Boy, if it's days, God help your parents. Okay. Is it weeks? Is it months? I like my phone. I don't derive the same kind of enjoyment from my phone that I used to when I first got it. It's got a calculator. Oh, let me try. Oh, yeah. I remember very clearly I was probably about 8 because it involves my mother, okay? And it was my birthday coming up and she said, okay, well, you get a present. What would you like? And I said to myself, I want Voltron. Voltron is a die-cast metal, 5 lion, comes together to form 1 super robot. I want Voltron. So I couldn't believe it. She said, okay. We went to the toy store. I remember it was on the corner of Longdon and Rosemead, this toy store. We went there next to the Federated company. It was like that's an electronics store. Okay? We bought Voltron. We bought it about 2 weeks before my birthday. That was a mistake. She said, I'm going to store it away until your birthday. Well, of course I know where she puts things. Used to be, back in the day, 8 years old, I would walk home by myself from school. I had a key to my house. I would be home by myself until about 4 o'clock when my mom got home from work. That's what happened back in those days. So from 2:30 until 4 o'clock, not proud of this, I would go and I would play with Voltron. Because the Voltron show was on at 3. How can you watch the show without playing the toy? That's what are you expecting? So I took a little knife and I cut the tape. Oh, man, watching. Oh, the blue one. The red one. And then when I know that the show is about to end, mom's about to come home, got to put it back, put the tape back on, put it back under the bed. Every day for 2 weeks. And then I hung out with Arnold, and I have a mutual friend, Pierre. Pierre had everything. Pierre was every boy's dream to be Pierre. He was an only child. His parents were wealthy. He had everything. And Pierre had a new toy called Robotics. Robotics was a toy with motors. You assemble things. It's like an Erector set, but with movement. You can assemble. You can make a little dinosaur head. You know, you get a little motor, a little pad to control. It was awesome. And I said to her, Mom, I don't want Voltron. I want Robotics. And she said, yes. Maybe she was already ill at that time because she was quite indulgent. So we took the toy back to the store. The toy shop said, this has been opened. She looked straight at me. Did you open it? No. They took it back. And I got Robotics. And to this day, I regret that. Oh, I wish I had Voltron. What's the lesson here, folks? I don't know. The lesson is that these things don't bring fulfillment at all. They're not. They don't bring you joy. They bring you happiness. And that happiness is a very short-lived happiness. Is that not frightening for you? How quickly you move on. How quickly you find that things that bring you enjoyment yesterday no longer bring you enjoyment today. And I'm going to be very frank with you. I'm going to be very honest. Because this experience of not being satisfied with things, my own personal fickleness in things, things that brought me enjoyment yesterday that no longer bring me enjoyment today, how quickly I change, how quickly I move on. Do I have any assurance
that I'm going to be a faithful husband. If you pray for me for anything, if you pray for my family, pray that God would make me better than myself. Are you like this at all? Is it just me? Do you all have the same things you had as children? They still bring you the same kind of enjoyment? Or are you like me, like Kohelet? You move on very quickly. You surround yourself with things that bring you happiness, but no joy. They bring you titillation, but no fulfillment. Kohelet's trying to tell us something. And yet, this is the rat race. Here's Kohelet, here's Grandpa telling us about his wisdom, and we're all looking at him like, yep, you're right. Amen, Grandpa. And then we turn right around and leave Grandpa's presence and do exactly what Grandpa did. Strive to fill our lives with things, thinking our situation is going to be different. No, I know me. I know me. And maybe that's where it starts. Are you aware of yourself? I know I've already had several situations in my life where I thought, well, this is going to make my life fulfilled. This is going to make my life really satisfied. And it helps for a little bit. And then it goes away. And then you've moved on. That's what Kohelet did. That's what I did with Voltron. I moved on. Kohelet's saying, folks, listen. Listen. This is a universal thing. It happens all the time. It's not just me. It's not just me. It's what happens. And yet, some of us continue to live as if our situation is going to be different. That, my friends, is foolish. That is foolish. One more thing here I want to point out. These gardens that he planted, the parks, the fruit trees, what were they for? They were for himself. You will find in this passage no fewer than 15 references to himself. Let's look. I tried, verse 3, I tried cheering myself with wine. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. This is not an arboretum that he built for the enjoyment of other people. This is for himself. Planted all kinds of fruit trees for myself. Again, I'm supplying that, but that's the implication. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees that were for me. I bought male and female slaves to serve me. I had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem. I amassed silver and gold, the treasure of kings. I acquired male and female singers and a harem for myself. The delights of a man's heart. Now, I don't care about a man's heart. I care about my heart. I did it for myself. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. Kohelet, what'd you do? What'd you do, buddy, with your time and your resources? And Kohelet says, you know what I did? I lived for me. I lived for my enjoyment. If we're trying to learn from Kohelet here, we're trying to learn perspective. And this lesson, Kohelet's lesson, is not going to be a lesson that we're going to learn in one sitting. It's going to be over a period of time. He's not finished yet. We're only in chapter 2. Ecclesiastes has several chapters. But as he's giving us these tidbits, these little mini lessons, we would do well to listen. Does this describe us? Where we're just living for ourselves. You know, one of the one of the necessities of church community. Obviously, one of the main points is we sing together, we listen together. But I would also suggest one of the necessities of church community is that in church, we are reminded that there are other important people in the world. Other people in the world that deserve our attention, our time, our service, our energy, and even our money. We are taught to come here and not live for yourself. Because generally speaking, Monday through Saturday, if it's not really involving church people, generally speaking, we're kind of insular folks. We're kind of self-contained units. I go to my house, you go to your house, you go to your house. We're sort of self-contained, and we need to be reminded. When we come together, we see these people. Look around. These are people who are important in our lives, or they should be. Kohelet says, I came up empty because I lived for myself. I enjoyed and indulged myself with no limitations. I hope that when we come to church, it would be one of the purposes would be to remind ourselves we need to be more selfless. Selfless. My problems are important. But you know what? So are my brother's problems, my sister's problems, my friend's problems, my neighbor's issues. Those are important too. And let me, for a moment, as I'm interacting with the other person, listen to you. Maybe this week it's your turn. One of the reasons why we keep coming together. Because we don't want to end up like Kohelet. And Kohelet doesn't want us to end up like Kohelet. And yet, so often, we are going down Kohelet's path. It's time for us to listen to you, Kohelet. You searched for meaning in wisdom, and you came up empty because the world's broken. You searched for meaning in pleasure, and you came up empty because things don't make us fulfilled. And certainly living for ourselves doesn't make us fulfilled. There's got to be something more. There's got to be something different. And I hope as we walk through this together, we will be ready to listen. Let's pray.